The skinwalker let out a howl and hurled its arms forward. Twin bands of darkness cascaded forth, splintering into dozens and dozens of shadowy serpents that slithered through the night air in a writhing cloud, darting toward Listens to Wind. The medicine man didn't flinch. He lifted his arms to the sky, threw back his head, and sang in the wavering, high-pitched fashion of the native tribes. The rain, which had vanished almost entirely, came down again in an almost solid sheet of water that fell on maybe 50 square yards of hilltop, drenching the oncoming swarm of sorcery and melting it to nothing before it could become a threat. Injun Joe looked back down again at the Nagloshi.
"That the best you got?"
The Nagloshi snarled more words in unknown tongues and began flinging power with both arms. Balls of fire, like the ones I'd seen at Chateau Wraith, were followed by crackling spheres of blue sparks and wobbling green spheres of what looked like jello and smelled like sulfuric acid. It was an impressive display of evocation. Had a kitchen sink gone flying toward Listens to Wind, conjured from who knows where, it wouldn't have startled me. The Nagloshi pulled out all the stops, hurling enough raw power at the small, weathered medicine man to scour the hilltop clean to the bedrock. I have no idea how the old man countered it all, even though I watched him do it. Again, he sang, and this time shuffled his feet in time with the music, bending his old body forward and back again. The motions obviously slowed and muted by his age, but just as obviously part of a dance. He was wearing a band of bells on his ankles and another on each wrist, and they jingled in time with his singing. All that power coming at him seemed unable to find a mark. Fire flashed by him as his feet shuffled and his body swayed without so much as singeing a hair. Crackling balls of lightning vanished a few feet in front of him and resumed their course a few feet beyond him, apparently without crossing the space between. Globes of acid wobbled in flight and splattered over the earth, sizzling and sending up clouds of choking vapors, but not actually doing him any harm. The defense was elegant. Rather than trying to match force against force and power against power, the failure of the incoming sorcery to harm Listens to Wind seemed like part of the natural order, as if the world was a place in which such a thing was perfectly normal, reasonable, and expected. But as the Nagloshi hurled agony and death in a futile effort to overcome Listens to Wind's power, it was also striding forward, closing the distance between them, until it stood less than 20 feet from the old medicine man. Then its eyes glittered with a terrible joy, and with a roar, hurled itself physically upon the old man. My heart leapt into my throat. Listens to Wind might not have come down on my side in this matter, but he had helped me more than once in the past, and was one of the few wizards to hold Ebenezer McCoy's respect. He was a decent man, and I didn't want to see him get hurt in my defense. I tried to cry out a warning, and as I did, I caught the look on his face as the Nagloshi pounced. Injun Joe was smiling, a fierce, wolfish smile. The Nagloshi came down, its mouth stretching into a wolf-like muzzle, extending claws on all four of its limbs as it prepared to savage the old man. But Listens to Wind spoke a single word, his voice shaking the air with power, and then his form melted and shifted, changing as fluidly as if he'd been made of liquid mercury, that until that moment had only been held in the shape of an old man by an effort of will. His form simply resolved itself into something different, as naturally and swiftly as taking a deep breath. When the Nagloshi came down, it didn't sink its claws into a leathery old wizard. Instead, it found itself muzzle to muzzle with a brown bear the size of a minibus. The bear let out a bone-shaking roar and surged forward, overwhelming the Nagloshi with raw mass and muscle power. If you've ever seen a furious beast like that in action, you know that it isn't something that can be done justice in any kind of description. The volume of the roar, the surge of implacable muscle beneath heavy pelt, the flash of white fangs and glaring red-rimmed eyes combine into a whole that is far greater than the sum of its parts. It's terrifying, elemental, touching upon some ancient instinctual core inside every human alive that remembers that such things equal terror and death. Thanagloshi screamed, a weird and alien shriek, and raked furiously at the bear, but it had outsmarted itself. Its long, elegantly sharp claws, perfect for eviscerating soft-skinned humans, simply did not have the mass and power they needed to force their way through the bear's thick pelt and the hide beneath, much less the depth to cut through layers of fat and heavy muscle. It might as well have strapped plastic combs to its limbs, for all the good its claws did it. The bear seized the skinwalker's skull in its vast jaws, and for a second, it looked like the fight was over. Then the Nagloshi blurred, and where a vaguely simian creature had been an instant before, there was only a tiny flash of urine-yellow fur, a long, lean creature like a ferret with oversized jaws. It wiggled free of the huge bear and evaded two slaps of its giant paws, letting out a defiant, mocking snarl as it slid free. But Engine Joe wasn't done yet either. The bear lifted itself into a ponderous leap and came down to earth again as a coyote, lean and swift, that raced after the ferret nimbly, fangs bright. It rushed after the fleeing ferret, which suddenly turned, jaws opening wide and then wider and wider, until an alligator coated in sparse tufts of yellow fur turned to meet the onrushing canine, which found itself too close to turn aside. The canine form melted as it shot toward the alligator's maw, and a dark-winged raven swept into the jaws and out the far side as they snapped shut. The raven turned its head and let out mocking caws of laughter as it flew away, circling around the clearing. The alligator shuddered all over and became a falcon, golden and swift, its head marked by tufts of yellowish fur that almost looked like the Nagloshi's ears had in its near-human form. It hurtled forward with supernatural speed, vanishing behind a veil as it flew. I heard the raven's wings beat overhead as it circled cautiously, looking for its enemy, and then was struck from behind by the falcon's claws. I watched in horror as the hooked beak descended to rip at the captured raven and met the spiny, rock-hard back of a snapping turtle. A leathery head twisted and jaws that could cut through medium-gauge wire clamped onto the Nagloshi falcon's leg, and it let out another alien shriek of pain as the two went plummeting to the earth together.